Good afternoon, good evening, or good morning, whenever you're listening to this. My name is Christopher Panks. I am the host of the Swindon Town podcast for The Washbag. Today I'm joined by Ron Smith, editor of The Washbag.
Hello, Chris.
Hello. I'm also joined by Real Life Northerner and chief sports reporter for the Swindon Advertiser, Gary Rose.
Hello, Chris.
Hello. And I'm also joined by Swindon Town FC writer, Tom Obdretsky. How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris.
Good. Let's start with Tuesday, Torquay 2-0 win. Gary?
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect response, really, from the Crewe game. It wasn't, obviously, one of the best performances against Crewe that Swindon have had this season. But, Torquay, for the vast majority of the match, they were, you know, everyone to a man was putting a very good performance. And it's make sure that they can go to Wembley on Sunday, not having to worry about what other teams are going to do at the weekend.
It was important to turn that around, wasn't it? I mean, we're not used to losing almost this year, but two difficult ones to take, particularly the trip up the A420.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, when you just take a step back and you have a look, it's just two defeats in the league this year, so it's a phenomenal record, and then we're going to have to lose a game eventually at some stage. So it's always about how they respond to these kind of defeats, and they bounce back with a 4-0 win over Dagenham, and then they won obviously on Tuesday night. So
best possible way to take a trip to London, I suppose. Ron, what did you think?
No, it was a great result. I mean, I was a little bit surprised about Torquay, how I did think that, you know, they did have such a good start to the game, and, you know, it was strange not to see that come through, really. I mean, they had so much sort of strength up top, and you know, just didn't seem to control the game after we sort of got back into it, really. It wasn't really clinical in their chances. And, you know, for all the sort of what I wrote about earlier in the week about all their sort of possession, generating plenty of chances away from home, just really didn't show it. So, you know, they've been on such a good run recently. I think it's telling that we've beaten teams like, you know, Torquay, or obviously this week's Shrewsbury a couple of weeks ago. We've beaten all those good teams at the County Ground recently.
I agree. I mean, it's the second time in 2 weeks that we've beaten the team that's second in the league. I mean, when Swindon beat Cheltenham, they were second place in the league, and that shuffling of the deck has moved Torquay back up there, I suppose. And, you know, the start of the game for Torquay, it started very brightly for them, and the makeshift back four was quite apparent, Tom.
Yeah, it was. I think I gather from a few people in the Arkell stand that Oliver Rissell wasn't unanimous man of the match, but certainly from my position, and I'm sure Gary will echo this at the back of the Arkell stand, that Oliver Rissell certainly did put in a shift. And I think that the makeshift back four, to not have conceded a goal against both Cheltenham and Torquay, who were at the time second in the table, is not only huge from a points cushion point of view, but from a psychological point of view as well.
Definitely.
It breeds confidence throughout the team, so they can see that the usual solid back four aren't there, and yet they're still keeping clean sheets and they're still scoring at the other end. Then that's fantastic. Can only breed confidence and can only lead to better things.
I think that they've started a lot of games, particularly at home, where the crowd are now beginning to expect wins with such fantastic form that Swindon have had. The games start nervy, and I don't know if it's that the players are starting nervy or if it's something which the crowd transmits to them, but certainly there are errors and sloppy play in the opening parts of games until something disturbs that equilibrium. You know, whether it being scoring, as they did against Crawley, and then going on to win that game, but equally when they conceded against Shrewsbury for the first time in however many games at home. And they reacted to that, and I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, really, on sort of how we started games this year. I mean, I haven't got my spreadsheet in front of me with all my stats, but we've only scored two or three goals in the opening 15 minutes of home games this season. We've been so strong as we've built as the match has progressed, whether that's because of the confidence or it's because of the pre-season fitness coming into play, that we can actually completely dominate teams as the matches progress. I mean, that has happened, hasn't it, this season?
I think it does tell, and particularly where the bench has been strengthened, where you can bring Luke Rooney off the bench. You know, that is going to terrify League Two defences. There's no other way about it.
I think as well, Paul Di Canio's team talks at half-time, there must be something in that that he does, because there's been times when they've just got to half time and you think, you know, I mean, there was a point, I probably, certainly up until Christmas, when they were a second half team, literally only a second half team, and obviously he obviously has that effect, and that's something Swindon certainly, you know, they haven't had, I don't think, under previous incumbents in the job.
I agree, and something else that Swindon haven't had is a goalkeeper as good as Wes Fotheringham, and I think that's played a big part in mopping up what perhaps could have caught Costas with the injury to Paul Caddis, changing the back four as it has.
No, absolutely, and again, going back to the makeshift back four, again, having someone they can rely on behind them, obviously, again, breeds confidence and that flows throughout the team. But I'd also like to bring up something else about the side's fitness. It's you often hear it said, well, at the start of this season, and even when Swindon went down, we were relegated in 2006, that what a lot of people remember when Lou Macari was here was he got the side fit and he got them organised. And I think Decanio has not only got them fit and organised, he's also instilled a sense of playing football in them as well. And so they're not only battling their way out of the division, they're playing their way out of the division as well.
Yeah, it's not been a sort of smash and grab. There haven't been many smash and grabs. There have been a couple, particularly Shrewsbury, as we've mentioned before. But generally, they've won games on merit, and I think it's quite admirable to stick to those footballing principles, because it hasn't always been rewarded. Particularly, you know, when we think about last season, one of the worst seasons. But Wilson, until he walked, did want them to carry on playing on the ground, and it just did not pay off at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, you say play on the ground, I mean Wilson last year, he did like to sort of chip it up a bit, and the team didn't really know what they were doing, but it's
but I do think as well that, you know, good. for all the lauding that Paolo Di Canio has had, there are times where we do play direct and over the top. And you know, it's kind of a supporter's prerogative to say hoof when another team does that. And
Yeah, I mean, we certainly haven't got Gerald Ifill at the back hoofing it upfield, and you know, the only person at the moment who's really doing that is you know, Chibokki to some extent. But you know, I mean, that's great to see playing it, but I do think the Town at the moment do still need to sometimes change it around a bit, and Di Canio likes to keep it pretty, play the football, but I do think the, you know, principles are admirable, but he does need to sometimes notice when you know, the team could punt it up there and maybe take advantage of that. But I don't want to see that, though. I want to see them play beautiful football.
I think particularly when Richie, as has happened more recently, is double-marked out games, and you can't play it on the ground at that point, because you can't play it into his feet, because he's got two blokes on him immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, then you've got to sort of adjust your game plan as a result of that. So, but then they've got players. I mean, you've got Jonathan Smith, who's not the cultured footballer that you'd have in your wingers, but... and Reece are the same in that sense as well.
And Lee Cox as well.
Exactly. So he's got the players on the bench that are them kind of players. I mean, that's, you know, everyone's sort of counting up the numbers of the squad size he's got. But the best thing about Paolo Di Canio is he uses his squad size to the full effect. So he'll bring in players that he does feel that can combat, you know, certain styles of size like Hereford, or even how the Cheltenham game did turn out in the end. So.
And we're talking to you today, listener, who is probably only one listener for this, the first podcast, from the County Ground Hotel. This is the point, if we were on the BBC, we would say other pubs are available. But we're not, so this is the only pub in Swindon. And there's been news today, Gary, at the Towers.
It's been a busy day, I'm just about keeping my eyes open at the moment, because it's just been non-stop. It probably doesn't look non-stop if you're looking outside, looking in, but you know, when you're having to see, you hear whispers of these names that might be coming, you're chasing it up, and then particularly when you misspell a position that the actual player plays in when you're putting it out.
What is he, a defender? He's a central defender.
Which was good. Picked up more than the actual player actually coming, so that was interesting.
That's always nice that the advert readers will always point those mistakes out to you.
Certainly keeps me on my toes, which is all you can ask for, to be fair, to be a journalist. So, but no, I mean, it's been a good transfer deadline day in first window, I think. I mean, the players have brought in, I mean, I don't think few clubs at the top half of League One would complain at these two coming in. We've obviously had Billy Bowden going out, which I think's, you know, a bit of a shame really, in terms of that he's going to miss out being part of a promotion winning side. But as Ron said before, actually, you know, I mean, it's a good team for him to go to, so can only benefit his improvement.
Definitely. I think that most importantly, they were both dynamite on Championship Manager as well. So that's always something that you're looking for.
Oh, not Championship Manager, Football Manager.
No, these were actually on Championship Manager.
Oh, well, you don't want to play that.
I echo the Football Manager sentiments. Yeah. I think Bostock particularly was a fantastic player for me when I was in charge at Sheffield Wednesday.
Oh, excellent.
I got sacked after a season, but I think that's by the by. And I think it's quite apt that Bostock has actually come from Sheffield Wednesday. Okay. But I think Bostock in particular is going to add another dimension to that midfield. I've noticed that Simon Ferry in particular, for the fantastic creative player he is, he loves to get the ball on the ground and pass it. And there were a few occasions I noticed, particularly on Tuesday against Torquay, where people were urging him to shoot, really screaming for him to shoot. And he's almost got it ingrained into him that he's got to look for another red shirt and give the ball to another player to maybe cross it into the box or whatever. And I think Bostock is going to add that little bit of thrust from midfield, if you like. I mean, apparently, I was reading earlier on that on his debut for Hull earlier on, either this season or the season before, he scored a 30-yard screamer. And I think only Rissa can really claim to have scored any screamers this season. So
Johnny Smith scored.
Matt Ritchie as well. He's had his.
That's true. There you go.
It's been correct already.
But not to embarrass you. Anyway, something you said there was quite interesting, that Simon Ferry does like to get the ball down and looks to pass it rather than shoot. Even to the point against Torquay on Tuesday, where he was clean through, his shot almost looked like a cross. It was like he was waiting for people to kind of burst into the 6-yard box. He just doesn't look comfortable shooting.
Absolutely. I mean, from a personal perspective, I love the fact that he can get the ball on the ground and pass it in the sense that he can continue and he can recycle an attack, if that makes sense. But I'm really excited by the fact, I can only echo it again, that Bostock is going to add some bit more of an attacking threat from midfield, whereas perhaps before, I don't know, Gary, if you agree with me, that attacking threat tends to come from Matt Ritchie rather than sort of a marauding midfielder from the middle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. You never sort of, if you had Simon Ferry running through one-on-one, you would be very nervous about it. I think you don't really fancy it. And he's admitted it himself. I think he's got some crazy bet on that he will go the rest of the season without scoring, and it's probably a good shout. But yeah, Bostock will definitely add that goal. So, I mean, I think out of the two signings that come in, both very good, but I think Bostock would be the more crucial and more vital in this end-of-season promotion.
And where do you see McEverley playing? Because obviously he is a quite versatile player. He can play in the centre of midfield or at left-back.
Yeah, I think he's brought in without a doubt for left back. I mean, Jeremy Ray, with his nice little hints that he likes to give before games, he said that it's a position that Paolo's been wanting to strengthen, and he has been wanting to strengthen left back for a time. He really does like Chibokke. He acknowledges the part that Kennedy played. I think he just sees Kennedy probably a little bit too young at the moment for an entire season promotion push. So. I think he'll be in as a left back. In usual Paolo standards, I don't think we'll see either of them start on Sunday. They'll be on the bench, I think, and then we'll see. We'll take it from there.
Who do you see as first choice now
at the left back position? Chibo, to be honest. He gave one of his best games, I'd say, in a Town shirt on Tuesday night. And again, as Paolo said it himself, in the last month or so, he's kind of come on leaps and bounds. With the foreign players, it has taken him a little while to settle. There's a lot of things behind the scenes that you don't see as fans and as ourselves, really, that they have to do. It's just into a new way of life. And obviously the language barrier for Chibo particularly. But now that's all working and he's settled and it's showing in his football.
And he picked up a knock on Tuesday as well, but admirably kind of went on as long as he could. Is there any news coming out of the club as to whether he'll be available on Sunday?
Yeah, he'll be fine. I mean, it's just a shame you guys couldn't be in the press conference on yesterday when Paolo did his, bizarrely, an Italian accent impression of Chibo complaining about injuring his foot, which was very amusing, saying that it was being soft and that he needed to man up because it was nothing at the end of the day. So he'll be fine for Sunday.
He was still limping at the final whistle, it looked like.
I know, yeah, exactly. And he was, what was your take on that when he came off? Were you?
Chibokke, he's a good player, but it's, what I was going to just say is that the key one for Sunday is Caddis, really. Is he going to be?
It's a race against time.
I mean, that's the crucial point really. I mean, otherwise, what's the defence going to be for that game?
But Joe stepped in at right back, which is the position he played for a long time at Barnet, and he can do a job there. I mean, Maka, as great as he is with his versatility, I don't think right back's his position. Solely because he doesn't, and Joe probably doesn't quite have it yet, because I don't think anyone can. He doesn't have that link up with Matt Ritchie.
No. And I think that sorry to interrupt. But sure. I think that Matt looked up a number of times at De Berry going the outside, like we've seen Caddis do all season, and just went inside and thought no. But actually, when De Berry had a chance to cross in, it was a fantastic ball.
Exactly,
it was taken right off of Alan Connell's head by the other keeper.
But I would like to think that Kenny was playing a little bit of a mind games to an extent, that he's just saying that we're not sure whether Caddis will be fit. But if I was a betting man, I'd say he's going to probably be on the bench at best. So we shall see.
Oh, well, we've got the, as we've said earlier on, we've got the makeshift back four, and it seems to be working at the moment. 7 points clear at the top of the league now. What a difference a year makes, eh, Ron?
Well, you know... I mean, the key question is, I mean, you know, this time last year, I mean, we were just so many defeats. We didn't know what on earth was going to happen. We knew we were going to be relegated, and we were really sort of worried about the year ahead, really. I mean, what was going to happen? You know, I mean, Town were just, you know, we're going to be in a downward spiral, we're going to go down to the conference. It really was a bit of a desperate year, particularly after the playoff final.
When did you know? Did you know that? Was it as soon as Wilson walked, or was
No. It's before that. I mean, I remember writing about it in early February that we were down, and when I'm sorry, I bore everyone with stats. That's my job. But when I think it was a Leighton Orient game when we lost 3-0 away at Leighton Orient. We Alex Revel scored twice, and afterwards I went back, and that was the game which we never recovered to go above the points tally, which we could have got to have been safe anyway, but so I was proved right. But anyway, I mean that was it. I mean, it was so long. I mean, after that game, Wilson had another, you know, eight games, I think it was, until
he was sacked after Southampton.
Yeah. Well, it was sacked or walked, I mean, rather. Yeah, sort of gently pushed. But yeah, no, but I mean, you know, don't really want to dwell on that a year ago. It's just, you know, what change it's made. But, you know, it's obviously started off, you know, really slowly at the start of this year. But I always thought, you know, with Di Canio coming in, you know, the sort of person he is, he isn't going to settle for second best.
Exactly.
And it's just proven to be that. And I just hope that him and we all get what we want in terms of the Wembley win, but also, more importantly, promotion, the championship. I want the silverware.
Good. And I think that kind of wraps up part one. Welcome back. We're going to talk about what we're doing on Sunday now. Have you got any plans, Ron?
I might be going to Wembley.
Oh, what's happening there?
Oh, I don't know. I think Swindon are playing Chesterfield. It'd be a JPT final, isn't it, actually?
Oh, there's some silver out for grabs.
Yeah, the competition we didn't really care about, and we wrote that about, you know, not so long ago. But yeah, no, happy to be there.
Good. It should be a good... Swindon's entire allocation has been sold out, I'm led to believe. So there's 29,000 travelling up.
It's a bit more to go, I think, yeah.
Is there?
But the tickets are now available for sale on the day, so I mean, there's a chance they might obviously do the last few. I think there's probably about 1,000 to go or so. So
I wasn't too happy about that, really, because obviously we've all paid for the booking fees. You know, the exorbitant, how much they were to buy online, to buy early. And you can turn up on the gate. I mean, the club haven't... I did ask the club earlier to confirm to me whether or not you have to pay the booking fee if you buy on the gate, but they haven't done so. All I can assume is that you don't.
It could be
face value. So, but, you know, it's great to have more people. I can't see many fans actually turning up on the day, really.
No, if you wanted to go, you'd have bought it already. Exactly.
It's the whole principle. I mean, you know, they could... Well, you know, we've moaned long and hard about the booking fees and that sort of fiasco, but it's just another kick in the teeth, really, for the fans.
It's a bit unfair for just, you know, how it was outsourced from the club.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, you're adding £8-9 on for two tickets. It just seems outrageous. You know, it may be a Wembley thing. It may be that Wembley have held them back for sponsors, and the sponsors have gone Swindon Chesterfield. I can't really be bothered with that.
Yeah, I think the tickets being on sale on the day of the game is Wembley's issue rather than the club's issue. I think, reading between the lines, they will be reviewing using tickets on for future use. Because, I mean, Chesterfield, were able to do it in-house, but they have a far less catchment area, so they've only sold 70, well, I say only, it's still a good selling, but they've sold 17,000.
Is it true that they're shipping in loads of Sheffield United fans?
They're doing the best. I think they've I did see Chris Turner, the chief executive there, put like a county-wide call for as many fans as possible to get themselves down.
They're not going to get, they don't want to try and get some Mansfield fans to come and support them, though.
Probably, I mean, they'll struggle on that side of it, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they have got any extra on the back of that. So
how many are Chesterfield expecting to take?
At the moment, they've got 17,700 sold.
That's not many at all.
No, exactly. They're not going to, they won't get to 20, which was their initial allocation. I think the additional tickets, you were saying about who's going to pick them up, I could see, to be honest, a few West Ham fans that might have been, you know, they've got nothing else on the Sunday.
Quite possibly.
Might just bob across, well, I say bob across, but go across to go see...
Well, yeah, you can't pop across to Wembley. This is one of my many bugbears with the new Wembley. Sit back, everyone. This may take some time. The last time I went there, I wasn't lucky enough to go to the old Wembley, but the new Wembley is the worst experience I've had in football in my life. And I went to Millwall away that same season. On the final day of the season, where both teams could have gone out. That was a fairly scary experience, but it was still better than that day. I mean, the only way that day could have got worse was if Jim Beglin and Andy Townsend had been pumped through the PA throughout the whole game. That's the only way that they could make that stadium worse. I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's... I mean, I've only been I've been to the old Wembley. I went in 1990 and I went in 1993. I also went to the very first football match at the new Wembley, the under-21s international against Italy. For, I think it was a 3-3 draw or whatever it was. But no, it's not, you know, it coming into its own in the future new Wembley. But, you know, you can't beat the old one in terms of atmosphere. But it was a dump. You cannot get round that. And the sidelines were awful, but... You know, the atmosphere made up for it. You know, it had one and it you know, took it away with the other. New Wembley, it's just a corporate monster.
Exactly.
Box.
I take your point. I take your point. It's, you know, the old Wembley was grotty, but that's what football stadiums are supposed to be in my mind.
I can only echo that. I'm still laughing at the fact he called the Empire Stadium Wembley a dump. I think that's quite funny. Sorry, carry on.
But, I mean, I have...
Well, it was in terms of the actual, you know... Facility, you know, those sorts of facilities. What you come accustomed to. I mean, the area around it's a dump, but the stadium itself, you know, was a glorious piece of architecture of you know for the Empire of exhibitions or games or whatever it was back in the 1920s. And the fantastic, you know, the first time I went there when I was, you know, 9 years old for the 1990 final, we were sitting in the main stand, you know, sort of behind the raw box sort of bit, and to get to the seats you had to go up the staircase in the middle of one of the towers.
I mean, I'd rather,
you know,
as a
9 year old, that was wonderful, just walking up there thinking, this is, you know, that
yeah,
was
that's,
but you know,
brilliant.
You don't get that now, you just go up an escalator.
Yeah, if you're a 9 year old, you go up an escalator and you have to ask where Top Man is. It's like a shopping mall, this place. Yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, they rip you off to get in there. Wembley Way is completely ruined now. It's like walking up the road from Cormac McCarthy. The whole thing's torn out of it. And it was the bubble on the pitch was the last straw. I mean, I was in row one and I arrived on that day and looked at the pitch. I've seen non-league pitches in better condition than that. And, you know, it's a football stadium. The most important part of it is the football pitch. It's not about overspending on, you know, all the corporate stuff so that you have to bring news in to bring in extra revenue.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned about the bubble. I mean, that was one thing, you know, most people remember about that day. I mean, so many people asked me on Twitter and on Facebook, you know, when we were talking about the Hall of Shame, which we're going through now, we're up to number 11. Everyone says, put in the bubble. And I say, no, that will never go in the Hall of Shame because... The pitch, does anyone remember? I mean, I wasn't around then, but 1969, the pitch, you know, it was an absolute mess just after the Horse of the Year show. It's not different. I mean, we won. I mean, you know, it's a bobble on the pitch. You've got to deal with it. I mean,
it's a different game. I mean, you look at the tactics employed that day, 2-3-5. It's a completely different game in terms...
Well, I don't think Swindon were playing a 2-3-5, but...
They weren't.
They were.
Were they?
It was all the rage in those days before the 70s kind of came along and the Czech Revolution. You know, if you've you should, if anyone out there wants to know about football tactics, read Jonathan Wilson's book, Inverting the Pyramid. It's a fantastic book. You will learn so much about why your team loses. But, you know, putting what the experience is aside, you know, I am still looking forward to it because there is still hope there, you know?
Yeah, let's think positive now. Yeah. We've done 2010. Let's move on to Sunday.
That now, yeah.
But ultimately, I mean, this is the benefit or the bonus of the Johnson's Paint Trophy final, isn't it? Because regardless of the result, it's going to be a day. I mean, that's what I just think a little bit. I'd be interested to know how you felt if you were on the other side of it, on the Millwall side of it, and you were coming away with your team going up
into the
next division.
I'd probably be too busy with my knuckles scraping along the ground and bleeding and going, to care too much about it. And, you know, the whole experience as well, you know, going there and coming back with it being in London, we were outnumbered with Millwall people. I use people in the loose term, you know, spitting at fans and getting off the train, being intimidating. And I know that's kind of what football's all about, but at the same time, you don't want, you should kind of have respect as well. Believe me, Gary, I'm a Swindon Town fan. I've been a Swindon Town fan for 25 years. I'm accustomed to losing. It's not about losing. It's about the whole experience of the day and it just didn't feel like football, really. It just didn't feel just. From the start, when we got there and it was raining, it took forever to get there. You walk up Wembley Way, the seats were wet. You saw Gordon Greer in a suit because, you know, decapitated Dion Burton in the semi-finals. It just had a horrible feeling. You looked at the pitch and it was just like a quagmire.
Sorry, I'd just like to say that's why I think this... final is quite important in many ways because it shows how far the club has come from that. I mean, I know it was a division higher and it was obviously a playoff to get into the Championship, but I don't think that team ever captivated the imagination of the supporters and the town as much as Paolo has done with this side. I think he's united after what happened last season, which we won't dwell on again. He seems to have injected this positive vibe whereby, speaking from a personal point of view, people who don't normally go to games, they'll just check the score on CFAX. They're those sorts of fans.
Do we still have CFAX?
Well, the sorts of fans that would just check the result.
Yeah, on the BBC website. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Other websites are available.
You see, even fans like that are saying, yeah, I'm going. Definitely want to see the team. I want to go and see the team, which is why I think it's such a fantastic occasion because there's no pressure on the team. They're 7 points clear at the top of the league. Mm. They've got a chance to bring back some silverware for the first time since 1969. And, sorry, Ron, I can see you wincing there in the corner. But
I caught Gary out on that one the other day. So
in terms of... Yeah. I mean, in terms of...
What about the Milk Cup?
At Wembley is the key word.
I beat the Cup in 2007 or whatever it was. So, yeah.
Which is very proudly displayed at the club at the moment.
What I would be interested to know is, which is a question I put to Simon Ferry today as well, actually, so it's good to get a Swindon Town perspective because he's been very diplomatic. I know there's obviously a difference in division, but the 2010 team compared to 2012, who would you say, given there is a lot of very good talent here at the moment, which, you know, is this team better?
Yes.
So I would have Fodringham in a heartbeat.
I just want to, but I think not just the starting 11, I think the squad depth is much better than it was in 2010. In 2010, when Gordon Greer wasn't there, and which was exacerbated to such a devastating effect last year, the team just collapsed, basically. So the squad depth at the moment would be... it's a lot better. I think they're... Well, I don't really want to go as far as say they're playing better football, but I think they seem to be a bit more together. They just seem to... Again, I can go back to this. They seem to have captivated the imagination of the whole town and everyone wants to come and watch the team again. And I think that's the most important thing.
That is a really interesting question as well, Gary, because the players that were here in that season seem to have grown so much over the past 2 years. I mean, you know, Aidan Flint looked like a raw talent, but actually probably wasn't fit for the job. And now he just looks like an absolute colossus, doesn't he? Simon Ferry, likewise. Simon Ferry was often panicked in possession in 2010 and could give the ball away. Tom was telling me earlier that he watched him for the whole second half against Torquay, and he gave the ball away once, which was when he was playing a Hollywood pass rather than a simple ball. So it's a bit of a skewed question as well, but I mean, I think Fodringham, definitely. Caddis has taken steps forward as well. Benson.
Yeah, well, I mean, thinking about the comparison between the two teams, I mean, I still think that, you know, the current team is much, much better than it was then, apart from the strike force. I still would put Painter and Austin in this current team, and it'd be a blinding team.
Because
Austin completely can go out and, you know, work channels, is, you know, his jumping is fantastic. Such a great poacher, you know, better than Benson. And then you've got the, you know, the Caddis and the Ferry who were in that team in this one. I mean, because we are definitely going to be going out this season. And I depending on how much this team stays together, the only one I'd most like to go is probably Richie, if there was one.
Yeah.
But, you know, how they perform next year. To be honest, though, I can't see it's going to be the same team, because Paolo's probably going to sign 25 players over the summer. He's probably already signed 20 of them. And
two of them will go out on loan, so we'll bounce the books.
Yeah, exactly. And he'll still keep all the same players. He won't really squad rotate.
Going back to Gary's question, I mean, I'll turn it back on itself. Who would you have, Richie or McGovern, on the right?
Richie. I mean, Richie, when he's at his best, I mean, even when he's not at his best, I mean, you know, he blew hot and cold on Tuesday, really, but he still weighed in with two assists. You just need a player like that in your team who's just capable of just winning a match winner.
He's just got that bit of class, hasn't
regardless
he?
Of how he performs.
He could have, you know, it's a bit of a Theo Walcott thing to go to Arsenal. That game against Spurs, when you had two good touches in the whole game and came away with two goals and turned the game around.
I'd say I don't think you can actually directly compare the two players because of the different roles that they're set to play. I mean, John Paul McGovern is what, you know, back in 2010 was the very first washbag player of the year that we ever awarded, just to the couple of readers I had then. He was amazing that season, and his crossing was unbelievable, but he completely lost it the next year. Where on earth it went, I don't know. But
and that was his first good season in three as well, wasn't it?
I mean, he just, you know, hugged line, and he, you know, his crossing was fantastic. You know, Rich is a completely different player. You know, personally, I prefer the system that Di Canio plays now anyway. So, I mean, of course, you prefer Richie.
You mentioned about just sort of sticking with this. You mentioned the two names, Painter, obviously, and Austin, that you would have in this. It's exactly what Simon Ferry said. But there was one more, he said, who he feels...
You'd have Greer at the back.
Yeah.
He felt differently. There was one other player. He's the only three that he mentioned.
Vincent Pericard?
Johnny Douglas.
Johnny Douglas.
Oh, good old Vince. No, he's a nice bloke.
What about De Sevi?
Put De Sevi in the current Di Canio team, and he'd be an entirely different player. He will be much better. He was not suited whatsoever to how he played last year. He's, you know, I feel bad for him.
I thought he looked quite good. I thought he looked quite bright in the first game of the season against Brighton. He was, you know, muscled out the game by Adam El Abd, who is just a thug, in my opinion. He looked bright, and then just nothing happened. And there was such great things spoken about Pericard when he came in as well. Just one of those, you know, flops, I suppose, that just can't adapt to the game.
Yeah, I mean, when Pericard originally signed, he said in the advert, I remember on one interview, he said he was going to score 15 goals between signing in January and the end of the season. He didn't score until September.
Southampton.
Away at Southampton.
When there was no one there.
No.
Apart from me and
so. Yeah, no, he doesn't.
I was there at Southampton as well. I was living in Salisbury at the time, so it was just a little jaunt down the road.
I was living in Winchester.
Just you two then.
Yeah, it was just us two. We sang the whole game.
Yeah, I remember the shock because the ball came in because we were up opposite end of the stadium. He kind of just seemed to stick a leg out.
Yeah.
And then the net rippled. We thought, has he scored? He's actually scored. Pericard has scored a goal.
But then at the other end of the pitch, you were looking at Guilly Duprado and going, oh, wow, he looks like a player.
Look where Southampton are now, I think that says it all.
Well, exactly. Anyway, let's stop looking backwards because it's just going to upset us. Let's look to the future, specifically Sunday. The opponents, those standing in the way of that first silverware, Wembley silverware, Chesterfield. Ron, thoughts?
I know nothing about Chesterfield. I'm not going to profess to know anything about them.
They're called the Spirites.
Yeah, they play in the blue and I seriously, I mean,
Kevin Davies used to play for them.
Yeah, I mean, I went up there. I mean, my very first away match as a Swindon fan, my dad dragged me out of school to go up to Chesterfield when we won the League Two title in 1996.
I watched those highlights the other day.
Yeah, I put them on the blog earlier on the sort of video of the week, but I know nothing about Chesterfield really.
Perhaps
Gary or Tom can enlighten us a bit
for you,
more.
Some of us have actually done some research.
Well, I'd just like to say, referring to that title clincher in 1996, in the games that have been played since then, Swindon have actually won 5, drawn 2, and lost 3 of those. So, form is on Swindon's side.
When was the last time we played them?
2006.
Thank you.
Sorry.
But yeah, so you're weighing in desperately to get in with the start, but I was going to throw it out just in case. I'm not sure whether it'll be the same one, but what they do have that might be a potential advantage is they've got in their team, well, I'll say team in Chesterfield, is two people that have experienced being the kind of underdogs and win at Wembley, which is the manager John Sheridan and then the chief executive Chris Turner. They were part of the Sheffield Wednesday team that beat Man United in the League Cup in 91. So I mean, that's the only other thing that they've got, that he's able to tell the players how they go about preparing for the day. I mean, I suppose Di Canio's had obviously the UEFA Cup success, he's won league titles, but there's not a lot the Chesterfield can have over Swindon, I don't think.
Turner and Sheridan bringing their boots with them then?
I think it won't be a bad shout.
Yeah, how tangible can that effect be? I mean, the motivational side of things is obviously important, but you know, aside from the manager being so animated on the side of the pitch and, you know, doing an Andy King fag smoke, then there's not...
The day of the game itself, of course, but it's I think a lot of it is probably, you know, in the preparation of it as well. I mean,
of course,
as Di Canio said it himself, I mean, I can't remember which game it was that we go back to, but he was talking about Richie. It would have been the Shrewsbury game, I believe. Richie was sat in the car park for an hour and a half beforehand and the players came in, their faces were white. They were all nervous about the fact that they were, it was a top of the table clash, and what was riding on it. I think that moment was probably put Swindon in has helped him now, so that won't be too much of an issue now. But he'll probably, Sheridan and Turner will know how to. They'll be able to spot that, what the players are doing, whether they're getting excited, and just manage that so that the energy's not burnt before they go on the pitch. Really,
definitely. Well, I spoke to a Chesterfield fan earlier in the day. Who writes for their match day programme, a chap called Dean Mansell, who you can follow at Away End on Twitter. And what he was telling me is that their season this season is an archetypal terrible season. I mean, they had the best season in their history, is what he told me last season, where they went up as champions and nobody could get the ball off them. What happened then was in the off season, and we all know about this, they lost one of their top strikers, Craig Davis, who had scored so many goals in their promotion season, Billy Painter. And then they've lost Leon Clark, who they had on loan from our parish. And, you know, that those goals haven't been replaced at all, have they?
No, they haven't. They haven't had a real problem scoring goals this season. Another one of my little stats, in their last 10 games, they've only managed to score 7 goals. But, it's a big, big but, they have... I think it was in February they actually beat Sheffield Wednesday,
and that's what Dean was saying to me, that they've actually had good performances this year, but they've just been losing out, and particularly since Christmas, when Sheridan admitted that the side was not good enough and brought in a number of loanees, the performances have improved markedly. But what they have struggled with, as we've said, is getting the ball in the net. I mean, Leon Clark is still there. Joint lead scorer, mm-hmm. With 9 goals, and he departed in December. So you've got that massive gap, you know, and that the Leon Clark thing is more of a Charlie Austin, you know, from our perspective.
No, absolutely. I think that is, and that's a huge, again, psychological thing, especially like with Swindon last season. If you're keeping them out at the other end, it doesn't mean anything unless you're putting the ball in the back of the net at the other end.
Because the best thing you can hope for is a point at that.
No, absolutely. But
I spoke to him also about their defensive prowess. He said that the defence has been shored up a lot more since Sheridan brought in two loanees. One will be very familiar to us, Liam Ridehouse, of course, formerly of this parish earlier in the season, who is cup tied on Sunday.
Yeah, luckily, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, luckily indeed, yeah. And he said that Nathan Smith is the chap that had lost out to him, and he's not been convincing at all this season. When I told him about Matt Ritchie and Paul Caddis, he almost cried.
Well, I mean, you know, it's been strange that not many opponents have actually put on, you know, right-footed player to play at left back against us this year. So whether or not if they haven't got Ridehouse and you know their backup left back isn't the key one, whether they put someone else over there to switch. Really, I think someone did it recently, and it's sort of I think it was Chapman, wasn't it? They played a right-footed left back,
yeah.
and that seemed to stifle Ritchie for that game. So. Hopefully Chesterfield don't listen to this and pick up that tip that you should pick up yourself.
Yeah. Just block that out, Sheridan, right? And we know you're listening. He also said that on the right-hand side, they've got a loanee called James Hurst, who has apparently performed admirably from West Brom, I believe. But he said that they're weakest down the left, which would seem to play into Swindon's hands.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, Drew Talbot, I think, that's probably on that left-hand side.
He said Nathan Smith will probably come in.
Oh, he's going to play on the left wing?
Left back.
Ah, okay. But yeah, like you say, I mean, yeah, that's undoubtedly Swindon's strength. I mean, it just depends. But then, to be fair, the other side's becoming, you know, equally strong as that right side's been, which is a good time for it to do, because I was always concerned when everything was going down the right. Managers were saying that the best, that right side trio, Ferry and Ritchie and Caddis, was the best in League 2. That they're all wise to it, and everyone's going to nullify that, and then where do we go then? But then we brought in Rooney. I mean, De Vita, it's a shame for him where he is at the moment, because he's done a fantastic job playing in a position he's not played in throughout his career. Yeah, and I would like to see, hopefully, that he'll be at the very least on the bench, but because Holmes, you know, he is a more pro. But with Billy moving on, maybe De Vita will be a second striker again now, so. But yeah, that left side now is equaling that right side effectiveness, and I think it'll be key on
perhaps that could play to Swindon's hands then, where their focus is on the right hand side, that the left can exploit that.
Yeah, and we saw, I think, in Holmes's performances so far, that he will be a danger, and his crosses, and obviously from corners, he'll be a constant menace to them. And then if Holmes isn't, can't do it obviously on Sunday, but talking about the league in general, I mean, if Holmes isn't doing the business, then we've got Rooney to come on. I mean, there's just options there that we just haven't had on that left side.
Holmes goes to the line a lot more than what Ritchie certainly does, and Rooney to a certain degree as well.
Well, I mean, that's because he's playing on his natural side over on the left. I think he's the first left-footed player to play on the actual left-hand side this season, so he's going to hug the line a bit more. I mean, he did switch the other day when Ritchie was substituted. Holmes did come over onto the right-hand side, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But I also think that Holmes playing on the left actually helps Chibokey a little bit.
Yeah,
because with Rooney playing in front of him, Rooney obviously cuts into his right foot like Ritchie does on the opposite wing onto his favoured foot. And that then creates that overlap for Caddis to then come charging forward. And I don't think, it's just my personal view, that Chibokey is used to being that marauding type. He's used to being more of an orthodox fullback. Whereas having someone in front of him who sticks to that wing, they can then develop a bit more of a solid partnership, if that makes sense. So rather than being a bit more fluid, it's a bit more orthodox. And I think that, personally, I think on Tuesday night especially, that helped Chibokey quite a lot.
And Chibokey does need help, doesn't he? I mean, it's quite clear that he needs help. It's certainly in positional sense.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of how Chibokey is perhaps reluctant to go forward, perhaps it's just sort of the Italian mentality as defence, really. You know, how they play over there is different. I'm not quite sure, really. I mean, it's.
I would say the opposite. I would say that he's far too confident in coming forward. But
no, but as Tom was sort of saying, he doesn't overlap. He doesn't. Go fully forward. He can't commit. Perhaps because he hasn't got the confidence in his ability to get down and cross. I mean, his crossing was a lot better the other day.
I think that perhaps that could be to do. Yeah, but I like his crosses from deep as well, and I think that he should do that a lot more without bringing the ball quite so far into the opposition half, because he finds himself out of position on a number of occasions when he does that. Because when you're throwing it into the mix the likelihood is that it's going to break down, I mean, 9 times out of 10, and then you're out of position. I think the difference between the right-hand side and the left wing is that Richie often comes short, and that provides an easy pass for Caddis, whereas perhaps on the left-hand side, Rooney's a bit Rooney or Holmes are a bit more advanced.
But I think the big question is, sorry, because I'm going to take on hosting duties now, what about in terms of Sunday, starting 11, back to front? Obviously, Fodringham in goal, that's a given.
Lanzano, come on. You've got to give him his...
I don't know, Gary, there's some inside information you can give us. Is he about to gallop up on the inside?
Definitely, I've seen him, yeah. A bit more prominent.
Has Fodringham's arms fallen off? Because that's... I would still play Fodringham over Lanzano with no arms.
But, I mean, on the goalkeeper front, I would like to see, I think, Phil Smith on the bench. I mean, he's played a key role in getting Swindon to where they are.
I still do like Smith, but, I mean, I never felt confident with him in goal. Whenever it's in the air, it's a nightmare.
How many subs do we get on Sunday? Is it 7 or is it 5?
I need to double-check before I can verify that fact. But, I mean, going back on the competition as a whole, it's been 7, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah, okay. So he should be... space to play to have a goalkeeper on there,
and he's always had usually he's had in a cup competition a goalkeeper on the bench, so I think we will see Phil in there.
So Rooney's cup tied,
yeah,
as is Bowden, but he doesn't really, he's out of
count.
The picture now,
yeah. So is Holmes cup tied?
No.
So Holmes on the left.
So I'd like to propose my back four.
Okay,
yeah,
go for
yeah,
it
go on, Tom.
So in an ideal world, if Caddis is fit, then I'd play him a right back. But going on Gary's insider information, betting man on the bench, then I'd probably, always going to be a bit controversial, I might stick with the back four that started on Tuesday.
With Rissa at
centre half.
I'm on that. That's great. I'd personally throw Caddis
because he bought a lot of Di Canio's anger on Saturday. He was not happy, last Saturday he wasn't
against
happy with crew. So I think he is happy with Risa. Yeah. So I think Tom's got it spot on. I don't see a change in that.
I certainly think, you know, even if Caddis was back and was fit to play on the right, I'd still pick McCormack and De Vera for the central partnership.
Yeah.
Because they've just been fantastic recently.
Centre mid partnership,
Ferry and it's a difficult one. Because Di Canio seems to sort of change it round. But I'd probably see Rizzo stepping back into central midfield if he's not needed at the back. Otherwise, it'd be Jonathan Smith.
You think it'd be Smith over Cox?
Yeah.
See, I think it would be Smith over Cox and Rizzo.
Yeah,
I agree.
Just because of the way the two complement each other and have complemented each other over the course of the season. I think that's just a natural way to go.
Yeah. What about on the right?
Oh, I don't know.
There's so many
options. I quite fancy Esaias, the forgotten man.
Yeah.
Let's play Lander, but out of position. It might work. You know, we tried playing him in position, and that certainly didn't work. So let's just think outside the box.
Yeah.
Right, obviously, Richie. Okay, up top.
Benson, and I'll have Tom's suggestion of his partner.
I'm going to put my mortgage on Alan Connell.
Yeah,
not that I have a mortgage, but I just
next month's rent.
That Connell just adds something a bit different to that forward line.
He does.
It seems to complement Benson that in a way that the other strikers don't.
I agree with you. I'm working on a piece at the moment about the difference between the strikers, and I think that the biggest difference between Connell and the rest of them is that he just gambles. He takes a gamble, you know, the ball's in the air, he gambles on Benson getting that, or there being a lucky bounce, and his run is in behind. Whereas, particularly watching Billy Bowden, he waits for the header to be won, and by that point,
there's cover.
Defenders with experience will have covered that. And that's why I think Billy Bowden's a fantastic player. I think he's a very technical and skillful player, but the anticipation isn't there at the moment. And in this league where there are so many journeymen centre-backs, with that experience, it just gets mopped up. Mm. But, Gary?
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. So, Connell, I mean, he's just a fantastic pro to have at Swindon as well. I mean, his attitude is first rate. I mean, he never lets his head drop. I mean, that's the good thing about this Swindon team. You sometimes feel sorry for who gets left out. I don't know, fans were obviously calling for Connell recently, but every single one of them, when they do come back into the side, they just really sort of fight for the place. They're not disappointed, they're not frustrated, and you know, you've got to give cheers to Di Canio for instilling that in his players.
And I think that there's more merit in having Conor Murray from the bench, you know, particularly when the opposition are tiring, because he's a real like young, pacey player.
Yeah. I liked him for the last 20 minutes, when the only time they actually decided to play well against Crewe, when he was playing in that sort of deeper role behind the front two. He looked very effective there.
But whether sort of Bostock would come in and play that,
but that's the kind
role.
I don't think that's
the point. I mean, we didn't actually. None of us put in Bostock into the starting 11.
No, because Di Canio, I just would never see him start a new player, because it's not been done yet, and he's one for keeping with the same thing that he's done through the season. And it is a little bit unfair, you know. I mean, that's probably another thing we should look at. Who would you have on the bench?
That's exactly the point I was going to make. The starting 11 pretty much picks itself, but I think the bench is going to be quite key. That's just what I think. In terms of changing the game.
Because I'd be throwing a bit of sentimentality into there, but Di Canio's insistent he won't. So, I mean, you know, if you should throw in sentimentality in, even Gabilondo, I mean, he played a lot of the JPT games and played a part in it. So you've got to have to throw sentimentality out the window at some stage. Mm-hmm. But
I think he wants the trophy more than he wants to keep the players.
I think so.
You know,
without a doubt.
You know,
yeah.
Satisfied. It's because, let's face it, is Gabilondo going to be here next season?
But he's got a year contract, so he's the easiest one to move on.
Well, particularly if we go up, you know, it's certainly not cut the mustard at this level. Is he going to magically step up? I can't see that.
No, exactly.
You see, again, he's a forgotten man. I remember the last time seeing him at Port Vale when another one of our great friends, Lucas Magiera, decided to finally break his duck. And since then, he hasn't. Gabilondo, this is, hasn't really got a look in.
But he's fourth choice left winger now. I mean, while Holmes is here.
It's true, but. Well, I don't know, Gary. I mean, there's obviously a huge strength in depth now on both wings. But where does he fit in now?
It doesn't.
No,
I
space
think it's
for
just
him.
As harsh as it is. That's I think Gabilondo's time probably served. You know, he's served it at the club now, but. Through no fault of his own, like I say, I think he's played his part, but it's just, if Di Canio keeps bringing in, as he has done, players to play in that position, then he hasn't got the faith of him to see it through a promotion push. So then he won't have the same faith for League One.
So in terms of our bench now then, we have both Bostock and McEverley, maybe Flint, probably Caddis.
Smith.
And Phil Smith.
That's six.
Happy with that? Five, sorry.
That's five, we need two
more. Which then gives you your attacking options of Rowan and Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe a midfielder, which would be Lee Cox, probably, I suppose.
I'm quite happy
yeah,
with
sounds.
That.
Yeah. It's a great midfield to have. Yeah.
I know Di Canio will tune into this and take all of our.
Hopefully.
But see, Lee
we
Cox
never
is,
know.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just saying, Lee Cox is another player that's brought in, and from what I've seen of him, seems to have done pretty well, yet he's not. Doesn't seem to be starting that many games. I mean, when they come in, every player kind of churns out. I mean, Gary, I'm sure you'd be able to echo this. It churns out the same rhetoric about great place to play, looking to like break into the team and things like that. And when he's got his chance, he hasn't, from my point of view, hasn't seemed to have put a foot wrong. Yet he just doesn't seem to be
chosen.
Breaking that glass ceiling.
But the thing is that he's only 21. We can't forget that, and it may be that Di Canio has looked at that for the future in terms of, you know, he's perhaps bringing players in now under the understanding that his team are likely to be in League One next season. So you do need a step up in class, and maybe he'll develop, as we were talking about earlier on. You know, a lot of the younger players have developed into fantastic players that were here in the playoff season and also in the relegation season last year. And some of them are unrecognisable in terms of performances this year and the way that they've developed into really class professionals.
Absolutely. Well, I think the last remaining thing to say is predictions for Sunday.
4-0.
That's a little bit optimistic. No, I think it. I mean, I don't know enough about Chesterfield to say some whatever, but you know, 1-0, 1-0, 2-0 Swindon victory would be lovely. I mean, the key in the end is you know, we all want to win because we're Swindon fans, but I just want to see Di Canio just go mental with the final whistle and just do a, you know, celebration. We all wait there for minutes after the match finishes just to see him wave his scarf.
Yeah, doing our favourite Millwall impression as well, going, oh.
And it's, yeah, we just want to see that at Wembley. I mean, that would just be fantastic. 30,000 Swindon fans and Paolo Di Canio
in front of the cameras as well.
Yeah, be wonderful, wonderful advert for the club, and we've got to hope that we win.
Absolutely, I can only echo that. I just think it's a day when Swindon aren't... There's no pressure on Swindon, as far as I'm concerned. At top of the league, there's a chance to go and showcase themselves on national television. On paper, they're underdogs. Chesterfield are in a higher division. No matter where they are, no matter how well Swindon are doing, I think people will see the league... Average Joe off the street will see your League One side against League Two, League One side will win every time. So I think that there's not that pressure on them.
I agree, but I think that the media likes to highlight how, you know, in cup ties, how many league positions are between the clubs. Hmm. And in this case, it's one.
That's true. I'm just saying, average Joe off the street, I think most football fans, with their head screwed on, will look at this game and say Swindon will at least give Chesterfield a game, probably win.
Right, we've got the average football fan, okay. What would Steve Claridge say?
Steve Claridge? Well, I wouldn't like to say anything libelous or anything that would get me into trouble. But no, I think this is a chance for Swindon to just put 2010 to bed. You know, all this hype before 2010 about never losing at Wembley. They lost at Wembley. It's a chance to get back some pride. More importantly, some silverware. And I think this team can really go places, and I think this is their sort of national spring pad, if that makes sense, because all the time the hype has all been on Di Canio rather than the club, if that makes sense.
And I think
this
that
is
was
a chance for the players,
a bit of a masterstroke by Jeremy Ray when he came in as chairman, really, because looking back, it's obviously paid off, but it was a risky appointment. Mm. Because you know, you had people with pedigree in that league who were also applying. Now, you look back now and Paul Buckle did not very well at Bristol Rovers. But what Jeremy Ray did, which was very different to Andrew Fitton, you know, Fitton was always in the commentary box, BBC Wiltshire. He was very forward-facing, stalwart of the club. And it, very much in Wilson's shadow, I think. Wilson was very much in his shadow. But what Jeremy Ray did was he took a step back and went, right, here's bloke, here is one of the most, it's the biggest personalities in the game. I'll just put him forward.
Absolutely. Well, I just think, in terms of Sunday, I just want to see, like Ron said, 30,000 Swindon fans turning Wembley red and white, Swindon to win, and I'm not going to put my neck on the line by giving out a score prediction, but I just want to go there, you know, not... Just to enjoy the day, play some football, and fingers crossed, win a trophy.
Are we playing in red this time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
It's going to be a classic cup final, isn't it? Red versus blue. Blue. Because as much as I've panned Wembley, watching the Carling Cup final, with where it was full and it was red versus blue, and it was a great cup final as well. You know, it obviously has the potential to be a fantastic venue. Prediction, Gary.
I've got to stick with the paper prediction, Anna, so which for a brief spell was 100% spot on, but being back to normal services resumed. But I've gone for a nervy, just because I think of what the whole atmosphere will be like. 1-0 win to Swindon.
1-0 win.
I think they'll take a little time to break Chesterfield down. Well, I mean, you can take your pick. I mean, it's not as given, is it, with a Swindon team at the
Fodringham.
Moment.
Fodringham. I reckon Fodringham. 90th
love to see
minute.
A big punt down the field and straight.
Jimmy
in.
Glass style.
Yeah, so. But no, I mean, yeah, I have no doubt in my mind, really, that Swindon won't win the game, to be fair.
And finally, in one word, we'll just go around the table quickly and then we'll wrap up. Trophy or championship?
League Championship. Well, what trophy? In both, isn't it, really? But
well, yeah, Johnston's Paint Trophy or Championship.
Yeah, well League Championship, but, you know, it'd be a good day out. I mean, what I will say, what I said earlier, is that last time Swindon won this Division 4 back in 86, the previous year's winners were Chesterfield, and obviously Chesterfield won this division last year. Just another coincidence, perhaps, but I do think that we're going to win the title this year, but also win on Wembley.
Championship, yeah. I mean, that's the long one that's got the most long-term benefit. So, league title, I think, when Di Canio would agree.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a hat-trick and say championship.
Hat-trick, and it's a full house from here. Thanks for joining us. We will follow this up at the end of the season, and there will be a regular podcast coming for the following season. Yeah, bye.